microphone when not speaking. In addition, if anyone other than a board member would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and wait to be acknowledged by the board recorder. Thank you. Now for some roll call. The board recorder will now conduct a roll call for the record.
All right, thank you. City of Beaverton, Commissioner Sanssouci.
I'm here.
City of Hillsborough, Commissioner Judah.
I'm also here.
TBWD, Commissioner Duggan.
Present.
All right, thank you. This concludes roll call. All other attendees will be recorded using Microsoft Teams.
All right, terrific. First thing on today's agenda, as usual, is the General Manager's Report. Mr. Kraska will present the General Manager's Report.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Judah, and good afternoon, Commissioners. So off we go with our General Manager's Report. We always start off with a safety minute, and this one is about grilling safety. So let's go ahead and get into it. So what would summer be without grilling? And it can be an enjoyable experience, but also can be quite dangerous if not done in a safe manner. So we've got some do's and don'ts for us to do it all safely. Starting off with the do's. So we've got six of them here. First is keep the grill a minimum of 10 feet away from any structure like your house when it's in use. Locate it on a flat, level surface to make sure that it can't be knocked over. Clean the grill regularly. Examine it and the propane tank before use. Check for any abrasions, cuts, or loose connections in the gas hose lines. Keep a spray bottle on hand to control the minor flare-ups. And keep a fire extinguisher within a couple of steps of your grill in case things really get out of control. That's all the do's, and so as regarding the don'ts, don't turn on the gas if it's you have a propane type grill. Don't turn it on when the grill is closed. But don't leave it unattended while it's in use. Don't overload it with food because the fat can create large flames. And hopefully, don't use it indoors because of all the exhaust and fumes that can come off of it. You want to release that out and not be kept indoors. And so that's it for the do's and don'ts and grilling safely. So do so and enjoy a safe summer barbecuing season. So that's it for the safety moment. Continuing on now with General Manager's Report. Starting off with the permanent and communications updates. And as before, the Willamette Water Supply Program permanent efforts remain very active. Attached to the General Manager's Report is a complete tabulation of the permits and approvals recently granted and the status of those currently in process. Regarding some permitting highlights is for the Metzger Pipeline East 1.2 project. The program received the Clean Water Services Site Development Permit and the Portland and Western Railroad Right of Entry Crossing Permit. Washington County issued conditional land use approval for the MPE 1.3 staging area and right-of-way access permits. The MPE 1.3 pipeline is our pipeline along Shoals Ferry Road from Roy Rogers up to about 217. And then finally, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue issued blasting permits for our PLM 4.3 project, that's our pipeline project in Roy Rogers Road, north of Sherwood, and our PLM 5.3 project, our pipeline project around Cooper Mountain, essentially. Regarding communications updates, the communications team provided information to Pampa Media as they prepared the article, What's Next with the Willamette Water Pipeline Construction, which ran on May 26, 2022. The article provided an overview of the Willamette Water Supply Program and included a map of the system. It highlighted the improvements made to the Willamette River Water Treatment Plant, specifically the raw water facility in Wilsonville, and the road closures along Southwest Shoals Ferry Road and Hall Boulevard for the Metzger Pipeline East Project. Pamplin Media called attention to the program's regional partnerships and coordination of the program's crossing of Highway 217 with Oregon Department of Transportation's projects in the same area. Also in communications, the neighboring property owners, emergency response organizations, and Washington County Land Use and Transportation were notified of the first test and production blasts at the water storage tank reservoir site, which occurred back on Friday, May 13. Regarding construction status updates, attached to this general manager's report is a tabulation of all the construction project status. A few highlights include that we began installation of our 66-inch water line on the PLM 1.3 project, again, our pipeline project around Cooper Mountain Road, but Cooper Mountain. Continued a rock excavation at the reservoir site. We completed a tunnel bore under the railroad tracks at Shoals Ferry Road for the MPE 1.2 48-inch waterline project, and we began drilling for rock blasting at the treatment plant site. Last up on the general manager's report is the steel market exposure update. The price of hot rolled band, the material used to fabricate WWSS transmission pipe, continues to fluctuate in 2022, though pricing has decreased approximately 5% since late April 2022. Current pricing is approximately 15% less than the 15-month average and 33% below the peak. With the receipt of the final pipeline project bid, the program's exposure to steel pricing volatility is limited. Program staff are working with our construction contractors to mitigate possible delays to our construction projects from long lead times. Staff are continuing to monitor the steel market and are not recommending the change in construction procurement plans and strategies at this time. Just as a postscript to today's general manager's report, unless the board is really interested in continuing to get the steel market exposure updates, I recommend that we essentially can drop that from the reports going forward, since we are essentially done with our procurement activities and our market exposure is essentially mitigated at this point. And instead, I might expand the construction aspect of the general manager's reports going forward and provide maybe some photos of some of our construction activity to provide you a little bit more context in terms of exactly what's going on out in the field. So just a couple of thoughts about the general manager supports going forward. If you have any thoughts, I'd be glad to take them at this time.
Thank you, Dave. Commissioner Santucci?
Just a quick question. Do you anticipate any future exposures related to the work to construct the water treatment plant itself?
Regarding the steel market exposure?
Steel market or perhaps concrete or other things.
Sure. Yeah, it's a possibility, though we have a guaranteed maximum price for just about all of the water treatment plant. And so it is a guaranteed maximum price. Now, we are holding contingency for escalation clauses and also for other aspects of the treatment plant. So we are covered in that way. In case there are any things that are out of line. And so we manage all of those contingencies and the use of those funds. But we're still exposed to the market, but the fact that we have a guaranteed maximum price and that we have contingency to cover other eventualities, I think we're covered within our baseline expenditures.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Commissioner Duggan, did you have any questions at this time?
No, I am fully supportive of what David just explained concerning how he wants to modify the updates. It makes a lot of sense to me.
All right, perfect. And Dave, I echo those same sentiments. I know I was the one that kind of pounded on the steel market exposure when we got rocking and rolling. My last thought on this is I just wonder how much any of the tariffs or the increase in pricing in that actually ended up costing the WWSS over what it was when we started, back when Trump was president and the Chinese tariffs and all that were coming on. I'm not looking for a major calculation. I know we never made any adjustments that I can recall over this whole thing, but just from a curiosity standpoint, if you get a minute, you can just send me an email or something. I'm just kind of wondering how we ended up with assuming we're complete, and I know we aren't exactly complete, but how we ended up with this steel market exposure update to the inflationary prices of our project.
So Chair Judah, the information that I know I can put my hands on pretty quickly is of all the projects that bid, say, over the last almost year now, that were really exposed to this volatile market in commodities, in particular steel, is that for most, if not all, of those projects, we had an escalation clause where if the cost of the materials between the day the project was bid versus when the projects were actually acquired, if the cost of those materials escalated or de-escalated, we had a change order clause with the contractor. And over this volatile market over the past year, there were some of those where we had a change order that increased our costs, and there were some that we had a change order that decreased our costs. I've never summed them up, but it wouldn't surprise me if at the end of the day, after this about 12-month period of volatile markets, it about balanced out. that that we paid on some and we got a significant amount of money back on others. So I can pull that information together and send it in an email to the three of you following this meeting.
That would be great, and I appreciate your answer. My recollection is, though, when we first had this conversation is, you know, did WWSS want to do anything about the increased exposure to the steel market issues, even on jobs that hadn't been bid yet? And I know we talked about, you know, should we be buying the steel ahead of time? Will the contractors take responsibility or not? So it's not necessarily what happens after it's bid, but if we had it on hand before the bid, and it could have escalated during that time. So just roughly, I mean, don't go to a lot of work.
Oh, there won't be much effort. I know exactly what you're looking for. I'll send you an email summing up the information that I have, and if you have follow-up questions after that, I'd be glad to provide more information to you.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
And I'm yes to your suggestion about changing what we were going to review in the general manager's report.
Okay, great. Thank you for the feedback.
All right, the next item is about public comment. Dave, do we have any of that for today that you're aware of?
I do not believe so, but I'll ask Annette if she knows if there's any public in attendance.
No, there is not.
Okay, so I'll just read the first part here. The public comment time is set aside for persons wishing to address the board on items on the consent agenda and matters not on the agenda. Additional public comment will be invited on agenda items as they are presented. And Annette has already responded, we do not have any public today. And thank you, Annette will continue to monitor the chat feature for any additional requests. The next item is the consent agenda. Consent agenda items are considered to be routine and may be enacted in one motion without separate discussion. Any board member may request that an item be removed by motion for discussion, separate action. Any items requested to be removed from the consent agenda for separate discussion will be considered immediately after the board has approved those items which do not require discussion. So today, the consent agenda consists of A, approve the April 7th, 2022 meeting minutes, and B, adopt resolution WWSS-06-2022, approving the FY22-23 WWSS board meeting schedule. Do I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda as presented? Please remember to state your name prior to making a motion and a second for this action item.
Commissioner Sanssouci will move the consent agenda as presented.
Commissioner Duggan seconds.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. I will now go for vote. The recorder will conduct the roll.
Okay, thank you. City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsboro?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, the motion passes. On to business agenda today, we have item A is consider approving a change to contract 2018-013 for $3,012,640 with Kiewit Infrastructure West Company to incorporate guaranteed maximum pricing number 1.5 for construction of the RWF 1.0 facilities construction of the Willamette Water Supply Program. Mr. Brish will present the staff report.
Okay, good afternoon, Chair Judah, commissioners. So talking about raw water facilities, GMP 1.5 for construction. Next slide, please. So the kind of outline or agenda for the presentation, I'll give you a brief background on raw water facilities project, talk about the scope of work that's associated with this GMP, talk about the bidding process, the cost evaluation of the bid results, the cost summary, benefits of why we should be doing this work early in the summer, and then finally the requested action. So next slide, please. You can do one click there. So this is just kind of an overview of the different parts and pieces associated with the raw water facility. So on the far right is the Willamette River, and you see the fish screens indicated there. So as part of the phase one work, the older, smaller fish screens were removed and larger new fish screens were installed in the river. Go ahead next. another major part of the phase one work was to do all the ground improvements along the top of the bank that parallels the Willamette River. And so that included deep soil mixing and angled jet grouting to protect that against lateral spreading and other seismic action. Next. As part of the larger fish screens, you need a larger capacity airburst system. And so this is basically vessels that hold compressed air. And when they need to clean the fish screens, they'll release that air. And it just kind of blows the debris that might be on the sides of them away in the river. And that was installed as part of the phase one work. Next. So a big part of the upcoming work after GMP 1.5, GMP 2, is the pump station upgrades. And so this is where we're going to be installing the large vertical turbine pumps inside that 50-foot diameter caisson that exists. So we're going to install several 1,500 horsepower vertical turbine pumps and a couple smaller ones as well. And so that'll be coming up in GMP number two. Next. Part of the phase one work, we completed installation of all the 66-inch diameter welded steel pipe, as well as a parallel electrical duct bank that connects basically the pumps to the upper site electrical. And that was all done and completed and restored during the phase one work as well. Next. So the other really big part of the upcoming GMP2 that you'll probably hear about later in the year is the upper site electrical facility. So it includes standby power, surge tanks, and an electrical building with all the controls up there. And then through the electrical duct bank, you connect the power that's received there down to the big pumps by the river. Next, and then the final element of the phase one work, completing the pipeline, was a trenchless crossing under Arrowhead Creek. And so that's all done as part of phase one. Next slide. So giving a little bit of background on the CMGC contractor and process for the raw water facility. So it was just about 4 years ago that we entered into a contract with Kiewit Construction to provide the CMGC services for this project. It included having their support during design phase, and so they were able to look at things from a constructability and a cost standpoint and offer observations and some value engineering. And then the other part included preparing the guaranteed maximum price proposals. And so initially, we were thinking there would just be two of them, the GMP1 for the phase one work that's now complete, that's at around $49 million. GMP2 for all the electrical mechanical pumps that'll be coming up. But then we found that given the timing, it also made sense actually to do a third one. So we're calling it GMP 1.5. And so there's a little bit of work that got moved out of phase one into this 1.5, GMP 1.5. There's some work that got moved forward from phase two, and then there's a little bit of new work. And so there's really three scope elements associated with this GMP 1.5, and I'll explain those next. Next slide, please. So the first part of the scope elements relates to doing some work this summer to install some small diameter piping at the upper site. And so what you're seeing there is kind of a complicated plan view, but it represents the upper site there. And besides the big pipe, there's a whole bunch of smaller diameter pipes. So there's water lines, there's sanitary sewer, there's storm drains. And so those are those highlighted colors, those lines that you see there. And so part of this GMP 1.5 is to go ahead and accelerate that work and get it done in the summer and out of the way. And I'll explain benefits later. And then another part of it is to complete the initial lift of paving. So around the building and all the facilities there, there's going to be asphalt paving. And so part of this GMP 1.5 is to go ahead and do, prep the site, do the rock, and get an initial impervious surface down that, again, will help, deferring some wet weather construction issues I'll highlight later. Next part. So the middle part, the second part, involves completing some work in the river related to piles. And so the image you see to the left represents a couple piles that were partially installed. So it's like you're looking downriver towards the fish screens beyond. So those circles represent the fish screens. And so on the upriver side, we're installing piling to protect them from any kind of debris in the river. But what happened during construction was the contractor wasn't able to completely drive the piles to the design depth based on the equipment they brought to the site. And so those piles were cut off just so there wouldn't be any navigation hazard in the river through the winter. And then as part of this GMP 1.5, we're bringing a different contractor back to finish all the piling. So they're going to splice piles there and then drive them to the final design depth. And then the picture you see on the right represents protection piles that are, it's like you'd be facing upslope towards the water treatment plant. And so there's a number of piles, again, that weren't able to be driven to their design depth. And so part of the GMP 1.5 work will be to bring in a larger hammer, a different type of installation method, drive them down to the design depth. And then there you see there's some cross members there. And those are intended to provide protection for the screens from any shallow slope failures that might occur on the riverbank. So again, you have piles around the fish screens to protect them. Next. And so the last part represents some drainage improvements right down at the top of the riverbank. And so you're looking at a plan view that's kind of right at the top of the bank. And so that dashed circle you see in the upper left, that represents the 50-foot diameter caisson, and the pump station building is sitting on top of that. Well, part of what we did during the phase one work is we actually, there was an existing pathway through the park, but we widened it and we actually designed it for full truckload. And so this actually allows us now to have complete access all the way down through the park. And you see some paving there with that kind of waffle kind of fill. But basically through the park, around the pump station, into the south side of the treatment plant. What that does for us is if there's any kind of conflict with the existing gate on the north side or you know, during a seismic event, if something fell, you know, and got in our way, we'd always have a road to get around to access our pumps. And so that's what this accomplishes. But what we found was after it got installed, that when there was these really heavy rains, it really kind of exceeded the capacity of the system to accommodate it. So you see highlighted there in yellow is some curb and some small diameter piping and drainage improvements that now collect the water from this new, you know, paved area and you know, brings it down farther down the slope with some riprap. Another thing that happened when some of the park improvements were being made, there's an outlook, a brand new outlook that we did for Wilsonville for the park there, but it kind of changed the drainage. And so there's an existing water feature, if you're familiar with the site, a really nice kind of stream-like water feature. Well, that overflows, and now when it does overflow, it drains down to this area. So these improvements also help with that. So next slide. So talk a little bit about the bidding process and how we arrived at the cost for the three different elements of GMP 1.5. So for the upper site utilities, it was negotiated with the CMGC contractor as self-performed work. But as part of that part of the work, they did subcontract, you know, some of the work out. They bid it out, so it's the paving, you know, vibration monitoring, hauling off spoils, and, you know, some of the other things that you see there. So there are some bid elements to it. For the in-water work, we did outreach to 12 marine contractors, and we used the best value approach. And then for the lower site drainage improvements, again, this was a negotiated part of the work with the CMGC contractor to be self-performed. But again, there were a couple smaller elements that were bid out for landscaping and pervious asphalt that was included there. Next slide, please. So this slide kind of talks about our evaluation of the costs and the bid results. And so for the upper site utilities, we did an independent cost estimate with our subject matter experts, and the negotiated amount was within 5% of the independent estimate, so we think that was a good value. For the in-water work, again, we had outreach to a lot of contractors. We received two bids, but really one of them was just a price list, and it really wasn't a complete bid. And so really there was only one responsive proposal. But the good news is it came in less than the estimated cost, so that's good. And then it's, you know, from what I hear from our team, it's a very well-qualified marine contractor who, you know, does really good work. And then for the lower site drainage improvements, the negotiated cost came in within about 1% of the independent estimate, so we feel good about that number as well. Next slide, please. So talk a little bit about the contract summary. And so the current value of the contract that includes the GMP1, all the soil improvements and the big pipe installation and all the work as part of phase one, that brings the value to around $49.6 million. When we add this GMP 1.5, I'll talk about the contingency in a minute here, that adds about $3 million to the contract value. So that brings the proposed contract value to around $52.6 million. So we use different types of contingencies in these projects. And so within the actual contract with Kiewit, we have both the CMGC contractor contingency at about 2%, and then we also have an owner's contingency at about 5%. Outside of that, and so that's representing that $3 million number, outside of that contract, though, we also carry an additional project level contingency of about 3%. And if you add all those up, those get to the 10% contingency that we've typically had when we started an element of construction. And then the other comment here is all these estimated costs are within the baseline 7 project budget. Next slide, please. So this is really kind of a breakdown now of a estimated partner share. So with the contract value that I just talked about, as well as with that recommended additional 3% contingency, that's outside of the contract itself. And so you'll see kind of the normal distribution of partners between TVWD, Hillsborough, and Beaverton. What's different here is there's also element of work that's associated with the WIF commission. And so all that pile work in the river is associated with the WIF share of things. And so you have the normal distribution between the three partners based on baseline 7 percentages. And then in this particular GMP, we have an additional WIF portion that's associated with that pile work in the river. Next slide. So the whole team sees there being a lot of benefits to doing this GMP 1.5 work as opposed to just waiting and doing it as part of GMP 2. So one, it reduces schedule risk, and so there's a lot of work that needs to happen on that upper site. And by, you know, doing some of the underground work and getting that out of the way and really prepping the site with that asphalt, that really kind of gets rid of some of the additional work that has to be compressed into GMP2. So we think that helps. By moving things up forward in time, you avoid escalation. And so we think between moving some of these work elements earlier, accelerating them, plus having that first lift of asphalt done on that upper site, it saves about $330,000. And so we think that was really a good move. Because if we didn't do that asphalt work on the upper site, then the contractor would have to prep it and deal with it during wet weather. And, you know, these sites get pretty mucky, and so we think there's a really good, you know, savings associated with, you know, doing this work early. It enables schedule flexibility for the weather-dependent work, and so we're taking some of that weather sensitivity away by installing kind of the below-grade, smaller diameter piping, as well as addressing up the site with asphalt. And then it allows us to complete the City of Wilsonville requirements related to the pathway. So in that middle element of work with the drainage, there's a pathway that we had to construct for Wilsonville down to the river for kind of some outlooks. And we didn't finish that work because until the drainage issues are resolved, it really didn't make sense to go in and finalize that. So now when we complete these drainage improvements, that'll allow us to complete all the work associated with that pathway down to the river and then turn that over to Wilsonville for their kind of long-term ownership and maintenance of that part of it. Next slide. So I think that's my last slide. So I'd be happy to take any questions or address any comments that you might have on this.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioner Sansusi or Commissioner Duggan, do you have any questions? I don't hear any. Of course, Mike, I always have a question.
Okay.
So you confused me with one thing early in your presentation. I just want to make sure I understood this right. So you said 1.5 is actually taking some of the one stuff
right.
that didn't get done and moving it out, and also pulling in some of the number two plan into 1.5. When you showed your calculations there, you showed the benefits to 1.5 and what the cost would be based on doing 1.5, but you didn't show what the reduction in the phase two expenses were going to be because you pulled the stuff in instead of letting it happen in number two. Is there a benefit to the two plan that we need to be aware of, or is this just number two stays the same even though we pulled stuff in ahead of time?
No, let me take a run at this, and then maybe Jeremy online here could add if I miss it. He's probably more familiar with how things moved around. So if we're moving some of this work up from phase two into GMP two into GMP 1.5, then that should end up being a net reduction in the GMP two. So you don't need to carry kind of the money in two places if that's kind of what you're getting at there.
Yes, like I mentioned, you only showed 1 and 1.5, and even though the 1 is complete, I don't know if that was a reduction because some of the stuff got moved out into 1.5, and you didn't show anything about 2, so I was just kind of picturing the overall difference between the plan that was 1 and 2, and now the plan that is 1.5 and 2.
Okay, I don't know that I'm not familiar enough with the figures here. Let me add another comment, and then if Jeremy wants to chime in. So we pulled money out of phase two to GMP two to as we moved it up in time, and that's included in GMP 1.5. I think we also got a credit back for some of the work that wasn't completed in GMP one, so that should have reduced the amount in that, and that got reallocated to GMP 1.5. And then the third part was adding some new work that wasn't even included in GMP one or two with those drainage improvements. So, Jeremy, is there anything you want to add to help explain that a little bit better?
Good, thanks, Mike. I think you explained it pretty well. I'd say that, you know, we still have to bid GMP 2, and so when we talked about some of the savings, you know, we hope to recognize that once GMP 2 is fully developed and bid. But I think, you know, the movement around, we definitely got a credit back on the phase one work that was, you know, moved to this 1.5, and we did pull money out of GMP 2 to fund the work that came out of there. But we're kind of holding the total project budget at net zero change at this point until we finalize GMP 2.
Right. And then just one more thing related to that. I believe we get our bids in. The bids are due, I believe, next week on GMP 2. So we won't have like all the numbers together assembled for GMP 2, but at least the prices should be locked down, I believe, next week. Is that right, Jeremy?
I think that's right, Mike.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, excellent. And my last question is, we talked about the pilings that didn't get driven to design, and we had to cut them off, and now we got to bring in other equipment and go back and do them again. Is that added cost to us, or did the contractor who proposed to meet the design in the first place, does he have to pay for these additional, bringing the equipment in and now putting extensions on it and all the work related with that?
Yeah, I'll start, and Jeremy, if there's anything you want to add. So I think it's going to end up being an add to the overall project. And so just to kind of explain what happened. And so in the phase one work, the GMP one work, our specs identified two methods that a contractor could use to install the piling. So one is a vibratory method and the other is an impact hammer method. And so the contractor that was selected utilized the vibratory hammer method. That the information was reviewed as part of the submittal process, and we've actually done some some follow-on work, and you know, with some outside independent experts related to what the bid document showed and what the contractor proposed. And given the geotechnical conditions, there's no smoking guns there. I mean, it seems like what was proposed was reasonable. It's just, you know, geotechnical conditions are just, there's a lot of uncertainty and risk. And so in this case, the vibratory hammer that the contractor brought wasn't sufficient. And so in GMP 2, where we eliminated the contractor's ability to use the vibratory method, and we required the impact hammer method because that's a method that everybody has very high confidence. And besides that, and I can't remember the technical terms for this, but as part of the bid, we required the contractor to do some analysis. There's some analysis you can do in the industry based on the ground conditions that identifies and confirms the appropriateness of a hammer sizing kind of exercise. And so as part of the proposal for the GMP2 work, we required that the contractor spend some money upfront, do this kind of pile analysis, and to submit that as part of their bid for the in-water work. And that was done, and so I think our team has high confidence that the impact hammer approach with the sizing that's selected seems to be appropriate to finish the job. So, Jeremy, is there anything that you'd want to add to that?
No, I don't think so, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, so I understand what we did, but I missed why the WWSS is paying for any of this if the contractor bid it that way and failed to succeed.
Yeah, I think the why is because you know, the contractors bid based on the documents that are provided, and one of the big uncertainties is you know, the ground conditions and how they'll perform. So you go out, and during the design, you do geotechnical exploration. So you do boreholes, right? And you take soil samples and you log them and you test them and you do all kinds of things to try and first understand the ground for the piece of design conditions, but then also to try and provide that information so that the contractor has a sense for what the ground's going to be like. But you're doing basically these 4-inch to 6-inch diameter holes, you know, spaced hundreds of feet apart. I mean, and on this program, actually, we've probably done more geotechnical exploration than any other project or program I've been associated with. So it's really great to be able to do that. But but it's no guarantee that what the contractor encounters at the exact location they're doing work is necessarily perfectly represented by these boreholes that are going to be just in different locations and, you know, need to think about accessibility. And so again, that based on, you know, our design team's review and then our later independent review as we were talking through this very issue that you're bringing up, everybody kind of agrees that what the contractor submitted to do the work was not an unreasonable thing to do. And so it's just, it's kind of represented as sort of a changed condition where it really becomes the responsibility of the owner. If the contractor provided something that's reasonable, there's no real grounds for us to go after them for that work to be on them, if that makes sense. But I don't know, Dave, is there anything you'd want to add to that?
Yeah, Mike, just a different perspective. So, Chair Judah, excellent question, excellent observation. And it's the exact argument that we had internally in terms of this particular situation, is we saw it as something like, wait a minute, is this something the contractor should pay for? If this is their means and methods and they failed, shouldn't they cover the costs? And what we did in our analysis of it to determine if we could enforce that is that we can't. Is that this is a situation where the contractor relied on information that we provided, and the conditions, including the acceptable methods that Mike talked about, you know, the vibratory and the impact hammers, and the contractor abided by the information we provided, attempted it, and it didn't work out. The conditions were different than what we had the technical data for. And therefore, we came to a decision at the end of the in-water work period last year to stop that, cut the piles off, and try again in the next in-water work period here. I'll also point out that Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, or Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, but in that initial bid for GMP1 for the vibratory hammer method, the costs came in way below what we expected for this work. And so there was a little bit of hope there that the contractor would be able to complete this work for the low cost that they bid it at. We tried it, it didn't work out, and so we're going to have to go back and finish the job, paying for a little bit more, the $580,000 or whatever it is, which actually came in below our estimate for that additional work anyways. So in both cases, at the end of the day, I think we're still below what we had originally estimated for this work, and we do think it's fair overall that we pay for it. We did argue about that quite a bit internally to make sure that we're not covering costs that we shouldn't. This is a particular situation that we do believe we should cover those costs.
Let me just add one more thing. So prior to kind of doing this work, as I'm also involved in a lot of really big tunnel projects and shafts and shoring and things like that, and the phrase that you hear related to these big civil underground projects is the owner owns the ground. And so you do your best to characterize it and describe performance in ways that are reasonable and that are defensible based on our explorations and our testing and you know, best practice in the industry. But at the end of the day, underground conditions are extremely variable. And they perform differently a lot of times than what's expected, and it's just, you know, it's part of the nature of these heavy civil jobs is just that uncertainty. So actually, you know, with our ground improvements along the riverbank, that actually, I was really worried about that, is having all kinds of, you know, differing site conditions, and there was a claim, but it all got done, and you know, we moved on with a successful installation. So that one was probably the hardest part. But again, at the end of the day, you know, the owner owns the ground, and our experts didn't find any unreasonableness in what the contractor brought to the job.
Thank you both for your answers. I feel warm and fuzzy about it. I don't see any hands raised. I'm assuming, unless somebody says something quickly, that we don't have any more questions for this. So do I have a motion and a second to approve a change to contract 2018-013 for $3,012,640 with Kiewit Infrastructure West Corp. Company to incorporate a guaranteed maximum pricing number 1.5 for construction of the raw water facility, 1.0 facilities construction of the Willamette Water Supply Program. Again, please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and the second for the item.
Commissioner Sanssouci will make that motion.
And Commissioner Duggan seconds.
Peggy, I have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct a voting roll call for the record.
Okay, City of Beaverton.
Yes.
City of Hillsboro.
Yes.
And TVWD.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, the motion passes. Item B under business agenda items is consider approving the annual work plan with Stantec Consulting Services, Inc. to provide program and construction management services for the water supply program during the fiscal year 2023. Mr. Kraska is on the hot seat for the presentation of this one.
Okay, thank you, Chair Judah. Good afternoon again, commissioners. So this is something we do each year at the June meeting as far as the annual work plan for Stantec for all of the construction and program management services. And so let's get into the presentation that I have for you. So the next slide here shows you what we call our Gantt chart, our schedule for the overall program. On the left-hand side are all of the projects that make up all the program elements, all the system elements, and also program elements. And then across the top is our schedule. And this particular version of our Gantt chart starts in the year 2020 and goes out to 2026 when we are complete. And so the next click shows how we create a slice out of this Gantt chart to highlight what activities are going to occur in the next fiscal year. And so basically everything that occurs down in that swath there are activities that are going to be going on at the program that we need to make sure we're staffed up for and ready to deliver on. Next slide. So summing that up in bullets, the first bullet is that we have 15 construction projects underway in the next fiscal year. By the end of this calendar year, we'll have 15 construction projects. So a lot of construction activity. We have ongoing program management activities, including WIFIA compliance and other loan programs that we're supporting, information for and tracking information for our safety program, our communications and outreach programs that will only continue to ramp up as we're out there in the community doing all of this work. Continued acquisitions, we still have some real estate activities to wrap up, still some permits to acquire, land use approvals, and additional procurement still to wrap up on this on the program. And additional planning work for the ongoing operations, including water supply integration, commissioning and startup, and operations. Next slide, please. So it's good to also, we're seven-ish years into this contract, to remember how did we get here today and how are we controlling costs? Essentially, what now kind of feels like a sole source agreement. Well, the Stantec services were originally procured back in the middle of 2015. And it was anticipated at that time that we would hire a program management firm for the full term. There's a lot of team building and institutional knowledge and information gained in our practices and procedures that we knew was going to be valuable in delivering the program. And so that was always the intent, to pick the right firm and carry with that firm going forward, assuming good performance year after year. And at that time was also our best opportunity to negotiate the parts of the contract related to cost that we could. And so it was a key consideration in selecting the firm. And as part of that, the contract that we have with Stantec uses labor rate multipliers that do not change for the life of the program. So in terms of the multipliers on top of direct rate to get the fully loaded rate, those multipliers are fixed from the very beginning of the contract. In addition, the annual labor rate adjustments are capped by the contract and are reviewed and approved by me. And I'll let you know that there are two components that we have in the contract. One is essentially a merit component, another is a cost of living component. Everyone is aware of all of the inflationary increases that we've experienced. And then according to the contract right now, Stantec and their major subconsultant, Corolo, could have increased their labor rates by up to around 10% for the next fiscal year. They're aware of the significant cost impacts that we as the owners are experiencing on this program, and they're sensitive to it, and they're doing the best they can to manage those costs. And part of that is that they, even though they could increase the labor rates up to about 10%, I think actually a little bit more than 10%, labor rates were held to, on average, below 5%. So I really appreciate that they, year after year, they've always done a very good job in terms of managing labor rate increases for the staff working on the program. And then finally, another way of managing costs is that staff proposed to work on the program only do so if I approve them. And so they have to submit information to me, including the role, qualifications, labor rate, and mobility costs, before they're even allowed to work in the program. So I manage all of the staff that work on the program. And then last point here is that the annual work plan, what's in front of you today, is negotiated each year based on the anticipated activities that are presented in the Gantt chart in the earlier slide. Next slide, please. So where are we at on this budget? It's big. It's more than $24 million for the next fiscal year. The next bullet there is it's refined down by about actually more than $500,000 from the original estimate. So the original estimate is usually given to me early in the calendar year. This year it was in February. And once that's given to us, we do a deep dive through it in terms of making sure that we have the right people doing the right things and the right hours associated with those folks. And there's a negotiation and a refinement as we learn more as kind of the months go on and figuring out exactly what's going on in the fiscal year. And so it's down from about $500,000 from the initial estimate. This value is within baseline 7, so it's reflected in the costs that were the budget that was already approved. I think back in March is when we approved the baseline 7. It's about 6% of the total planned spend for the next fiscal year, which is actually a lower percentage than it has been in prior years. But it is about a 36% increase over the budget from last year. And that has to do with the major increase in construction activity that we're going from a handful of projects up to 15. So there's a lot of construction managers, inspectors, and other specialists that we'll have working on the program to get us successfully through the next few very, very busy years. Next slide, please. So how does the $24 million break down? Looks this way. For Beaverton, it's about $1.5 million. Hillsborough, about $7.8 million. TVWD, almost $15 million. And a small fraction to the WIF partners for the total of $24 million. Next slide, please. And so the last slide here is to see if there's any questions. But before I hand it back to the board, I'd like to Jeremy Taylor is our program manager, representative from Stantec, and I want to provide him a moment to say a few words as he wishes. So take it away, Jeremy.
Thanks, Dave. Chair Duda, commissioners, I just want to take a minute to think. To say what an honor it's been to be the program manager firm for that's represented the Waterspy program for, like Dave mentioned, almost the last 7 years. And we certainly appreciate the opportunity to continue in that capacity for the next fiscal year and hopefully beyond. Our team is definitely ready and committed to continuing our partnership and successful delivery of the Willamette Water Supply System. So with that, unless there's any questions from me, I'd turn it back over to Dave.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, and I'll just echo that, like I said, 11 and a half years, or 7 years ago, we hired Stantec. Performance and service has been excellent year after year. And so I enthusiastically support approving this, but be glad to take any questions if the board has any.
All right. Thank you, Dave and Jeremy. Commissioner Duggan, Commissioner Sansouci, are there any questions for this?
None for me. Thank you.
All right, and none for me. So, Dave, thank you for that information. At this point, do I have a motion and a second to approve the annual work plan with Stantec Consulting Services, Inc. to provide program and construction management services for the Willamette Water Supply Program during the fiscal year 2023? Once again, please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and the second for this action item.
This is Commissioner Duggan, so moved.
Commissioner Sansouci seconds.
I take you have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the record.
All right, City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, the motion passes. Stantec, thank you for your continued excellent support of the program.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, next we have information items. Ms. Bennett will present a staff report on business agenda items planned for the July WWSS Commission Board meeting.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. At this time, there's only one anticipated action item for July, and that is, excuse me, the PLW 2.1 contract for construction. The 2.1 project is 3,300 linear feet of 48-inch welded steel water pipeline. It's located within the city of Hillsborough in the vicinity of the Aranco Woods Nature Park. We will be delivering this project utilizing a best value contracting approach. The request for proposals was published on April 6th, and we received three responses. Price proposals were due on May 10th, and written proposals were due on May 16th. The public bid opening is next week on June 7th. At the July board meeting, we plan to present the proposed contract with a recommendation to you for approval. These are all our upcoming action items for the next month. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. Item B, which is the next board meeting, is scheduled for July 7th, 2022, via Microsoft Teams. Next item on our agenda today is communication and non-agenda items. There are no communication or non-agenda items scheduled for today's meeting. But I would like to mention one thing. One of the things that we approved today, and maybe I missed this, but in the last consent agenda, item B was approving the WWSS board meeting schedule for 22-23. Can I get a copy of that? Maybe it was in the minutes and I read right over it, but I want to make sure I put it on, since we're not going to meet every month, I want to get it in my calendar correctly. So I don't know who else has that, but it would be nice to get a separate item so we can do that.
So, Chair Judah, it's being brought up on the screen there. It's in the resolution, the dates that we intend to meet. And it's also our intent. So we will meet every month up through October. And then the first meeting that we'll skip is November, and then we'll skip January and so on. But we'll learn as we go, and we're intending to place placeholder appointments on your calendars every month, just in case that the every other month thing doesn't work out. But you know, shown here on the screen are the dates that we intend and plan to meet.
All right. Yeah. I personally really appreciate those placeholders, because being such a busy individual that I'm retired. My next vacation, it's got to be worked around when these are, so I want to get those on my calendar plenty ahead of time. So I personally don't matter if I get the next 6-8 months worth of schedules sent to me to confirm, just so they put it on the calendar.
Sounds good. We'll do that.
All right. I'm looking for hands. I don't see any raised hands, so I'm assuming there are no other questions or comments for today, which brings me to the last item, which is adjournment. There being no further business before the Board of Commissioners, this meeting is adjourned.